Each of these panelists has a particular expertise, so I'm going to introduce them one at a time and let them talk about their experience personally and professionally in Oklahoma when it comes to jobs, workforce, business, and economic development. So first we have Ruben Aragon, and he is the president and CEO of the Latino Community Development Agency. He served as vice chairman of the board as well of the LCDA, which is the largest and most effective nonprofit service agency in Oklahoma, serving a rapidly growing Hispanic population. Mr. Aragon has served on numerous nonprofit boards. He's chairman of the Metro Tech Foundation board. He has been a lifelong serial entrepreneur, founding and growing a number of international manufacturing operations in Pennsylvania, Texas, Oklahoma. And he holds an MBA from Harvard University, you may have heard of it, and a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering from the University of New Mexico. Ruben?
Thank you very much, and very honored to be here. I'm the president of Latino Community Development Agency. That is an extremely large organization in terms of breadth of programs. We have 24 programs. I'm not going to talk about 24 programs, but we go all the way from breast cancer screening and breast cancer treatment, mental health treatment, all the way to tattoo removal. The programs I want to talk about are just two of our 24 programs. And they fall in the area within this topic, in economic development, of what I'll call, I think, the most important ingredient for economic development, which is human capital development. And human capital development, we'll hear lots of different things from panelists. You can start at a certain point. But there are certain rules in life that just kind of apply to lots of things. And early is by far better in almost everything. When we have our cancer treatment program, if we catch it early, before it's really stage one, we have a good chance. If we catch it late, when it's stage four, I don't care how much money throw at it, it's going to be tough. If you have a peach orchard, if you spray your peaches early, before the larva starts in there, you got a chance to protect them. If the larva's already in there and the worm's already there, you ain't going to get that peach. He's going to get it all. So early is better. And when it comes to human capital development, there is absolutely no question that early is better. And how early? Infant age. There's a well-known Nobel Prize economist, James Heckman, and we weren't allowed to bring PowerPoint presentations, but if I show a PowerPoint presentation, the highest rate of return of any economic development area, whether it's infrastructure, tax credits to business, free capital, the highest rate of return is early childhood development. It has a 17-to-1 rate of return, 16% annually compounded ROI. Way below that is K-12, still a positive return. Below that further, the longer you go, there's other things like workforce development, job training, second chance GEDs. All those are much lower in the return. And the question is, why? Well, in early childhood development, for human beings developing, the talents of motivation, persistence, and self-control are developed well before K-12. And so if you don't get them then, and in at-risk environments, you have a good chance not to get them. They have an additional emotional stress from other distractions. The neurons aren't developed fast enough. And when they're developed, it's too late, just like the worm that's in the peach. It's already too late. He's going to eat it all up. You're not going to get there. So we have two programs that deal with early childhood development. The first one's Early Head Start. We take infants in at nine months old. Take them to 3.5 years old. I'd like to talk further about that program, but I'm going to be a little limited on time. Perhaps I can cover it in questions. But we have the highest rated program in the state and one of the highest rated programs nationally. We do things a lot differently. We follow the Early Head Start program, but ours is bilingual, bicultural. At 3.5 years old, these kids can speak English and Spanish at a high, high vocabulary in both languages. And if you've taken a foreign language, probably you've been quick translators in the beginning. You think in English, do very proficient translating, and come out on your test and remember all these. These kids think in two languages, and thinking in two languages is very different. The other program we have, and I'd like to see all kids be able to have the Early Head Start program, But the other program we have, because there's not enough slots, is home visitations. And we do home visitations early, at the prenatal age, teaching these mothers to make sure that they provide a safe, good home environment, as well as being the kids' first teachers. We go in, we have two different programs. One of them, they have to be 3 months or less, and usually prenatal. The well-trained counselor goes in and assesses the home to make sure there's no stresses, make sure they understand there can't be any neglect, there can't be any abuse, there can't be any kind of trauma. That's very important in the neurological development, as well as teaching and parenting and other education. This is an evidence-based program, and it's actually, we got that contract together through OU. It was a collaborative grant, and we do three-fourths of the work for OU on this in terms of number of patients, and our results have been tremendous. For our early childhood development, we do something called longitudinal outcomes tracking. The lucky kids, those little three-year-olds that are in that class, 15 years from now, they're going to be the valedictorians of their class. And so that, by far and away, compared to any other program, is the highest rate of return for, and you wouldn't normally think, you know, you think of the achievement gap and you think of things like this that are sociological terms. That program is good from a pure economic rate of return in terms of economic development. The earlier you catch that, the faster you're on your way to strong human capital development, which is key for economic growth.
Thank you. Next up, we have Terry McGee. Terry is a builder, a developer, and the chief executive officer of McGee Enterprises, which has been incorporated since 1987 and in the business of residential renovation, new construction, and light commercial construction. Mr. McGee has made it his intention, and I think quite successfully, specializes in infill housing in an effort to improve communities realizing quality housing. To say that Terry is a booster for economic development in the city of Tulsa and in Oklahoma is a massive understatement. He is incredibly active both through his work and through his business in the business community, but also in the community at large, and has received civic and volunteer awards and recognition for his achievements that are way too numerous to even begin to name. So, Mr. McGee.
Thank you, Kate. How kind of you. Reuben, so far I think you're going to be in charge. I know some of these other characters. They're pretty sharp, too, but that was a pretty good spiel. I'm impressed. You know, as a firefighter, your story reminded me a lot about prevention. I was on the fire department for about 26 years. I remember one day a call came in, and I thought, this is going to be the day I get to rescue somebody. I can't remember what the code is, but this code tells us that it's a rescue. We get there, and it's a two-story house, and the house is just blazing. House has a basement in it. Come to find out, somebody had filled the basement up with gasoline. I'm thinking I'm going to rescue somebody. When in actuality, somebody set it on fire intentionally. I got to, you know how some of those old stairways would have the little scissor turn? You'd go up so far, you turn and head up the other way. I got you at second landing, and all of a sudden it looked like backdraft. Whoom! This blaze came through, and the two guys that were behind me, I turned around. I don't know how they got out of that building that fast. And I start doing what we call crawdadding, where you're backing up and you're scared and your hands are in the air. And my hands hit this windowsill. And I thought, ain't no way in the world I can reach that high. Boy, you talking about motivating. When that fire hit me in my rear end, I took off like Superman. Kind of a part of that story is motivation. Sometimes when you think you can't do, another part to that story, it may look like one thing up front. I'm thinking I'm going in for a rescue. The rescue ends up being me rescuing myself. After I got to that windowsill, I broke out the glass. Then I hung there thinking, this is embarrassing. And you know, all this noise, the fire truck and people screaming, all this chaos. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? That fire hit me in my rear end, and you're talking about screaming for help. Another point to that story, sometimes you're going to need some help. Sometimes you got to turn around and look who's behind you and in front of you and grab a hold and say, hey, I'm going to need some help. But the main part to that story, after going through that experience and spending 26 years on a fire truck, I thought, you know what? I'm going to get in fire prevention. So I took a series of tests and became an assistant fire marshal. So again, many little bullet points. I'm also a realtor. While being a firefighter, being able to work at different stations all throughout the city gave me a real varied opinion and view about the different social issues that came about. There's an organization in Tulsa called the Community Service Council. The Community Service Council is the strategic arm for United Way. At least that's the way I describe it. United Way raises all this money. Community Service Council is this neutral advocate that looks at all these social issues and try to figure out what in the heck are we going to do. Y'all will write down this website, csc.org. There's a story on there called a PowerPoint called The Perfect Storm, if you guys hadn't talked about it. What is the perfect storm? It's a convergence of all these different social issues and where some of the best thinkers in the world are going, what in the heck are we going to do? I'm kind of sharing that story with you because we need you guys to help figure some of this stuff out. I was the 211 advisory chair. Anyone know who 211 is? 211 is an informational source to connect individuals to the services that they may need. We started out covering 3 counties. Now we cover 37 counties. So you may be calling from Drumright, Oklahoma, but you're actually calling downtown Tulsa, but we're telling you where to get help in Drumright. Now, what does that do for me? Being the advisory chair, I've been able to look at all this data. Who's calling for hats, coats, gloves, can't pay your mortgage payment, need medical assistance, veterans having problems, all kind of social issues. So this, connected with my business development side, people consider me as a connector. Why do we go build schools, but we don't put sidewalks around the schools? Then we got the unhealthy problem. I'm sure you guys have probably talked a little about food deserts. Anytime you have to travel 10 or more miles to get to a grocery store, some parts of North Tulsa and West Tulsa in particular are food deserts. When you can't get quality fruit, meats, and vegetables, what happens? The life expectancy is 14 years less in the 5 zip codes predominantly in North Tulsa. 14 years less just because, based on where you live at. On that note, I'm going to pass the baton to my good friend, Shelly.
Next up, Shelly Cademy-Munoz is the executive director of Workforce Tulsa. Formerly, she was the senior vice president of economic development for the Broken Arrow Economic Development Corporation, one of the fastest growing suburbs in the country. She also spent 8 years, which is when I met her, she helped my mom start her business. She worked for the Business and Entrepreneurial Services Division of Francis Tuttle Technology Center in Oklahoma City. She assisted with small business startup strategy development and implementation. Shelly earned a BA, and I didn't know this until now, Shelly, but in art history, followed by a master's degree in regional and city planning with an emphasis on economic development, and both of those were from the University of Oklahoma. Shelly?
Thank you. How is everyone? I see snacks on the tables. I'm a little irritated that we didn't get snacks at the front table. I'm going to talk about very high-level workforce issues, but I encourage you to get involved in wherever you land, in the Workforce Investment Board, wherever you live. There are Workforce Investment Boards in every part of the country. There are, I think, 11 in Oklahoma. So Workforce Tulsa is short for Tulsa Area Workforce Investment Board, and that's who I represent. We are a board of 50 private and public leaders in the Tulsa area. I actually represent 4 counties, Osage, Tulsa, Creek, and Pawnee. Just a little bit about workforce. I am clearly biased, but I think workforce is probably the most important part of economic development. It was a natural transition for me to go from 20 years of economic development to move into workforce development because when I was in the Broken Arrow area, I knew what I was doing, but when I was working with local manufacturers, they couldn't find the employees they needed. And in head shaking, because he's dealing with the same thing. We're all dealing with it. They couldn't find the employees they needed, and so they had to send business away. And I think you don't have to have a master's in economics to understand that when you send business away, you're sending wealth away. And so I was experiencing this, lots of wealth being sent outside of my area and outside of my state. So in economic development, you can build a highway, you can build a building, you can clear a lot of land. You cannot create skilled workers out of thin air. It has to be a long-term strategy. And so that's what I'm going to talk with you about today. I think you'll learn probably in the next presentation that site location consultants consider workforce one of the top things that they look for when they're looking for a location to bring a new company, a new office. So just in case you haven't gotten my theme yet, workforce is really important. So, and we have entered a new realm of workforce. This is not your father's workforce, which probably goes over the head of all the young people in this room, but the older people will know what I'm talking about. You can no longer hang a sign on your fence saying we're hiring welders, because everybody is hiring welders. You can no longer put a billboard up in the middle of Tulsa or Oklahoma City saying we're hiring CNC machinists, because everybody is hiring CNC machinists. And at one time in Oklahoma, there were so many people out there looking for jobs that employers had their pick. And we have hit a wall in terms of workforce. And I don't think that that's going to change anytime in the next 15 to 20 years. And so employers have to step back and think strategically about how they're going to find the workers they need to stay competitive. So in Oklahoma, we have very low unemployment. I think we just bumped back up over 5%, but that's really because of the time of year. 5% is, when I was in college, that was full employment. I guess it still is full employment. But I learned that you couldn't go below 5%, which clearly I'm an old person, because we have gone well below 5% in the last 5 or 10 years. And what that means is that that everyone who is skilled enough to have a job has a job. So then again, you have to start being creative. And in Oklahoma, we've been stealing from other states. We've been stealing machinists and welders and accountants and lots of other people who are highly in demand. But we were fortunate in Oklahoma that the recession didn't hit us like it hit everybody else. And so our unemployment rate didn't go that high. So we are sort of a leading indicator. I think I'm not using that completely correctly, but I think what you see in Oklahoma, you're going to see in other states in the next few years, and that means their workforce is going to dry up as well, and we won't have anybody to steal. We have a serious skills mismatch in Oklahoma that demonstrates what the educational attainment is in Oklahoma currently and what it needs to be to meet the needs of the jobs that are being created. And if I had actually handed it to you, you would see that we have a tremendous number of people who only have a high school diploma or a GED. I believe it's 43%. That is never good. That is never, ever good. And if you do anything out in the world in the next 10 years in terms of volunteering or participating, whatever way, think about how you can get people to a secondary credential. Because there are lots of efforts around, and you can Google them, to get Oklahomans to that secondary credential. An associate's degree, a vocational technical credential, any kind of anything that adds to the GED or diploma status, okay? You would also see that we don't have enough college graduates to meet the needs of the state, and so, of course, we want to see people get to that college graduate level as well. As I said, we're stealing from other states. We have to eventually, we can't do that anymore. So we have to be creative. We have several untapped groups of workers in Oklahoma, and I'm going to talk about just the largest groups. This is by no means all-inclusive. Women. Historically, in Oklahoma, we have a very low participation rate for women. What that means is women don't choose to pursue work in Oklahoma, and I don't know exactly what the rate is. I bet Kate could tell us because she knows all that stuff. But if you have women who are simply choosing not to look for work but could potentially work if someone lured them into it, then that's untapped potential. So maybe that's part-time work. Maybe that's working while your kids are in school. Maybe that's providing some creative benefits, who knows, but that's an untapped group. Felons. We put a lot of people in prison in Oklahoma, and we tend culturally not to hire them once they get out. And so when you take a look at programs like the Skills Centers that the Oklahoma Department of Career Tech offers, the Skills Centers are actually in the prisons. And so when inmates are within a certain number of months of being released, they can enroll in Career Tech classes so that when they do actually get released, they have skills, and those skills get them a job. And I am over time, so I'm going to wrap up. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, we have Justin McLaughlin. Justin serves as the Senior Vice President of Economic Development for the Tulsa Regional Chamber. And in his capacity there at the Chamber, he leads a nationally recognized team of professional economic developers who work on attracting business, retaining and expanding business, small business development, and entrepreneurship. Justin is a native Oklahoman and has a bachelor's in business administration and finance from the University of Central Oklahoma and is also a graduate of the University of Oklahoma's Economic Development Institute. Justin.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate you giving us your time this afternoon. So Tulsa Regional Chamber, we basically work to try to better the economy of the Tulsa region. The way that we do that is we do, and I'll kind of describe our economic development program, and you all can ask questions a little bit later about it, but we have several aspects of the program. Number one is what we call business retention and expansion. And this is where we go out and try to meet with as many companies as we can on a yearly basis. Our goal is about 500 companies that we want to meet with. When we go meet with those companies, we want to find out what challenges they might be having. Are there things that we can address? Are they taking advantage of state insurance programs? And we want to make sure those companies stay here, and we want to make sure those companies expand here. And we've had a number of examples about companies that we've gone out and met with, or we've met with their headquarters, some executive at headquarters out of state, and we've actually seen expansions come as a result of those. So that's one of the most important programs. About 80% of all of our new jobs come from that business retention and expansion program. The second thing is new business recruitment. This is what gets the big headlines when you recruit a new company to town. This is where you get the big press conference that the governor comes out for. It's about 20% of our new jobs, and it's the most expensive marketing that we do. It's also the most difficult. We compete with economic development organizations from all over the United States. There's one in about every town, and so it's a very fierce competition out there for those new companies to come here, and I'll talk more about some of the reasons that those companies decide to locate in a minute. But we do a lot of travel. Our goal is to make sure that site location consultants, who are basically consultants that help companies make decisions on where to locate, we want to make sure that those consultants know us on a first-name basis and they're aware of what our assets are. We also want to make sure that we know corporate real estate executives of companies. And so we travel. I and my team do a substantial amount of travel to key cities to make sure that those type of people know us. The next piece is entrepreneurship. We feel like this is not something that we necessarily lead on. There's other organizations that are more in the lead, but we do want to make sure we're facilitating entrepreneurship. We have what's called the Forge, run by our Tulsa's Young Professional Organization, and it's actually full with tenants right now, and that's been a really neat thing for us to kind of help in that entrepreneurship space. Education and workforce is another piece of our program. Michelle has covered that. Workforce is key. And so we feel like that's something that we need to be working on. We have a workforce person on staff, and their job is to help companies staff up. I'll give you an example. We had a big announcement in January. Verizon is hiring 500 new people with a new financial services center. We recruited that project here, and now's the time that they're trying to staff up. And so that's kind of when the work begins. The next thing is community development, and this is our downtown development. It's kind of a new program for us. We started it about 3 years ago. And we feel like that to recruit the young professionals and to get them to stay here, we need to have a vibrant downtown. We need to provide living. We need to provide restaurants, things that Vince is involved in. We want to make sure we're providing those type of things for those young professionals to want to live here and to want to work here. That's a big priority for several of our CEOs as well, Alan Armstrong of Williams. It's a big deal to him to make sure he can recruit the workforce he needs, and so downtown continues to move forward. So we have a downtown development director that works with various entities on that. Our targeted industries that we work on trying to recruit, and these are based on the industries that we actually have here and that we have a strong workforce in, are aerospace, energy, healthcare, professional services and regional headquarters, logistics, IT security, which is actually basically comes out of University of Tulsa, and then advanced manufacturing. Our goals are to create over a five-year period are to create 15,000, help create 15,000 new jobs with average wages of $50,000 a year. We're actually about tracking about halfway. We're halfway into the program as of June 31st or June 30th, and we're actually about halfway there. We've currently helped assist with about 7,800 jobs created, and so we're pleased about that. We've actually been doing so well. Our original goal was 10,000 new jobs, and Tulsa's Future Oversight Committee actually increased our goals because they felt like we were kind of reaching that, so we're happy about that. The three things that I think there's a lot of important items when it comes to economic development, infrastructure, those type of things. But some of the most important that Shelley talked about is workforce. We've got to make sure that we have workforce that's trained and ready to go for the companies, and that's something they really do a deep dive on when they come to town. They want to make sure they can get the workforce. That's why Verizon located here. That's also why we have a Tulsa's Young Professionals organization, which is about 8,000 members strong. We want to make sure that young professionals can get plugged in if they move here or if they're looking to move here. And so that's a really active group if you all are familiar with. The next thing is incentives. I don't personally really like incentives. I wish we didn't have to do incentives. I wish we could just compete based on a great community that we have. But the fact of the matter is we have a very competitive landscape. The state of Texas, I just actually looked at this today, they've dispersed about $392 million to companies to recruit them there. And they continue. They've got about $137 million available for this fiscal year, the 2012-13 fiscal year. And that's our competition, and they're putting a lot of money into projects. And so we need to make sure that we have the Oklahoma Quality Jobs Incentive is something that we have. I can talk more about later. And then we have a small closing fund, about $6 million to compete with Texas, $143 million that they've got right now that we have in the state of Oklahoma. And the last thing is we talked about quality of life. We've had about $430 million invested in downtown with the BOK Center, with the new ballpark. And so we feel like that continues to, I think, even in 5 years since I've been here, we've had a remarkable change in downtown. So I think that's really something that helps keep us competitive. And I'll be happy to answer questions later. Thank you.
Last but not least, we have Rachel Hutchings. She is the Corporate and Government Relations Manager for American Airlines Maintenance and Engineering Operation here in Tulsa. She has a master's degree in organizational dynamics from the University of Oklahoma. She's currently the chair of the Oklahoma Employment Security Commission and serves on the Governor's Council for Workforce and Economic Development.
I've been up here taking notes, and I think my new favorite title is serial entrepreneur. I think it must take a lot of courage to be a serial entrepreneur, to start up something and then be able to do that repeatedly, and I think Vince Lavoie could probably talk a little bit about the courage it takes to start new companies and start new businesses that are really on the cutting edge. So my hat's off to people that are serial entrepreneurs. So I am the chair of the Oklahoma Employment Security Commission. I actually chaired my very first meeting this morning, so jumping in with both feet. I participate a lot with both the chamber and with workforce development, and my mantra is that workforce development really is economic development, and I think you're going to hear that over and over again. The things that we talk about, the barriers to employment, you heard about a lot with the last panel. The nice thing about working for a company like American Airlines is that they have this job here for me to go out and talk about how important aerospace workers are, how important manufacturing is, how important those welders are. And I can tell you that I echo what Shelley said, because probably 10 years ago, American Airlines could say, hey, we're hiring, and we would have people lined up Mingo Road, which is the road that American is housed on, and with people looking for jobs. It's not like that anymore. It's a huge paradigm shift, and our average age out there is actually 50 years old. So we're in big trouble. Our average age is 50. Our average length of service is about 16, 17 years, and we're not going to stop working on aircraft anytime soon. We're also getting ready to go through a major merger with U.S. Airways. Hopefully we'll be exiting bankruptcy and finally announcing a merger August 15th. So it's very, very important to the 6,000-plus employees out there that U.S. Airways leadership, who is taking over, understands how important Tulsa is to American Airlines and how important American is to this region. American Airlines workers make well over the average wage. They have great benefits. We pump a lot of money into our economy here, and so it's really important that our new leadership understands how important it is, and it's really scary to think that they might not. So we talk a lot about partnerships here. We have great partnerships in Tulsa. Anyone that's from the Oklahoma City area, you have great partnerships there as well. But we work really hard to make sure that we have a very cohesive voice when it comes to attracting and retaining skilled workers. I'm really involved with the young professionals. We talk about that nonstop. We get involved with legislative issues to make sure our legislators know what is important to young professionals. They don't always listen, but we're telling them anyway. And we do that in concert with everyone else here. So just to reiterate how important that cohesive system is and making sure that we're taking care of everyone in our region and getting them upskilled, housed, fed, learned, all those things that really keep them here and provide jobs for them to be here. That's all I have.
So I'm going to pose one question to you, to everyone on the panel, and then I'll let the students ask questions. Everybody on the panel, in three sentences or less, three sentences or less, in your opinion and experience, what is a good job? What is a good job? And let's start down the end and come this way. And then.
So I think I can say that in less than three sentences. A good job is a self-sustaining wage with health benefits that is close enough or available to you via transportation, whether it's your own or public.
I would say a good job is anything that helps helps support a family or family unit. And I would probably define it by the Oklahoma Quality Jobs Incentive, which is about $31,764, I think is the number. I just hope I got that number right.
I think I just would echo that it's a self-sufficient wage job. That and to echo Rachel's comments, that you have to be able to get to in a reasonable amount of time. And I would just add that you also have to be able to get your kids to daycare on the way to that job so that you get there in a timely fashion.
About echo some of those same sentiments. You know, one that you have passion for, that you wake up in the morning and just really can't wait to get to. You know, and being a firefighter for 26 years, I loved every day of it. But I also don't regret the day I left. But I was building houses and doing small commercial projects the whole while long. So you're going to have to definitely have something that's self-fulfilling and sustaining to be able to pay your bills and to be able to provide for your family.
As a serial entrepreneur, I think the best job is a job where you can support yourself, control your own destiny, and provide something to the marketplace. And Latinos are three times more likely to form their own companies. All these roofers that you see, they're all individual contractors. The whole construction industry has changed. It's no longer a wage job. They do it by the work. They quote the job. The roofing contractors, they don't get paid by the hour. They stay 14 hours on that roof because they get paid so much per 10 by 10 square, a roofing square. And many, not much education, but they're making, good roofers will make $250 a day with no education. Now, for me, a good job, obviously one that everything else, echo everything the panel says, but one where you can also control your destiny and have passion for your job and build your company. For me, that's the best job.
Excellent. Thank you.
You know, I, first of all, I think that Oklahoma, I don't know that even, let's talk Tulsa more specifically, Tulsa region. I don't think it's that we have necessarily a bad image around the United States. I think a lot of times we have no image. And so I think that's one thing that you asked why people, what keeps people from coming here. And I think it's probably not having an image at all, being called a flyover state, the state of Oklahoma. And so I think it's important for us. I talked about how we travel nationally to try to make sure that we're meeting with people, that people know who we are, that we're on their radar screen. And so I think that's, I think we, as a state have to be a lot more aggressive in recruiting jobs than maybe other states do, because, you know, we're maybe not immediately looked at. So does that kind of answer that question?
This is me talking. This is Shelley. Me talking personally. I think we don't know how good we have it in Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a pretty insular state. I'm one of the people. I've lived my whole life in Oklahoma. And until you leave Oklahoma, you don't know how good you have it. So do me a favor, next time someone is here from out of town, don't say things like, wow, why would you come to Oklahoma? Why would you move there? Why would you move from there to Oklahoma? What in the world would bring you here? There are lots of things that bring people to Oklahoma. I live in a lovely home with my three kids, and my commute to work is 20 minutes. And I work for a nonprofit, and I own a home. So I don't know many other places you could do that. That's kind of the tip of the iceberg, but we have it really good in Oklahoma. So remember that when you're talking to people who don't live here.
The Oklahoma of today is not necessarily the Oklahoma of tomorrow. There's been a massive, massive change. In Oklahoma City, 46% of all the students in the Oklahoma City Schools District are Latinos. One out of every five births in Oklahoma are now Latinos, and it's projected that within 25 years, one out of every three workers in Oklahoma will be Latinos. And what are we doing? We're passing laws that make it impossible for them to go to college. We want them to assimilate. You take a kid that's doing very well in high school, writes beautiful essays, but he's not documented. And so he cannot get in-state tuition. And therefore, what happens to him? He can't afford college. His best English, he's very assimilated. He speaks very good English, writes very well. But he can't go to college, so what does he do? He takes a job with his uncle to work on roofing. Now who's he talking to? All his conversation all day long is in Spanish. His friends that he goes out with are his coworkers. They're all in Spanish. More than likely, with the people he meets, his wife will be talking Spanish. 20 years from now, he's not talking much English anymore. All the investment of K through 12 to get him to that level has dropped off because we won't let him go to college. And there's no assimilation. You want assimilation? Accept him. Give him the same chance that everybody else has. You know, when I talked about early workforce development, a lot of this early childhood development, a lot of these other programs, it's too late to do job training if, without early childhood, if you take early childhood development, somebody from an at-risk home, and somebody that went through, that does not go from an at-risk home, the one that went through early childhood development compared to the other one, the one that did not go is 70% more likely to be convicted of a violent crime, 40% more likely to have teen pregnancy, 25% more likely to have to drop out of school, 60% more likely never to go to college. Will that be the kind of workforce that Oklahoma wants? That's why some of these early that's why I said get it early. The rest of the things, now our programs aren't just early childhood, we do a lot. If somebody that comes to our agency never got those programs, we do lots of other things to do gang prevention and lots of other counseling programs. I would tell you, when I said the return on investment, that's not my return. That's Nobel Prize economists, also the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Program, in comparing all other investments, early childhood development is by far the highest economic rate of return, far higher than building roads, far higher than infrastructure, far higher than tax credits, far higher than workforce development later, because by then it may be too late. They're already in prison. They've dropped out of high school. It's too late. So we have to direct our investments in the state to the new state, to realize the new Oklahoman. And we're seeing that change an awful lot.
Thank you. Excellent.
You know, I heard someone say earlier they didn't like incentives, but it actually sometimes takes those incentives. There's a little neighborhood I built over by Owen Park, right behind the Tulsa Country Club golf course. That entire block of land just stood vacant and bare, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And I decided to build my own house on it. And once I built my house, a two-story white stucco house, everybody told me those other lots would never sell. The reason they said they would never sell because they were located about 100 yards from the Osage Apartments, which was a low-income complex apartment. It just happened to be the oldest apartment in the United States. When I built my little development that they told me I would never sell any of those houses, All the houses were sold, all the lots were sold. The houses are like 250,000 plus. I've been bam in about 9 months. Then the Housing Authority Director, Roy Hancock at the time, called me up and he said, Terry, he said, in light of that little development you built, he said, the people from the Country Club golf course, they call us, they just really love it. They said, we're going to go after this Hope 6 grant. This Hope 6 grant was $55 million. And in light of getting that $55 million and going after that grant, they needed different housing additions of different value. They had some old mansions, some kind of in the middle, some lower income property. But anyway, and then they got another $5 million from the county. So by me doing that one development on the corner, that spearheaded a whole initiative in which $60 million was spent up the street. Now those beautiful apartments that you see that used to be the old Osage apartments, you never would have known they were those old apartments. The Shops of Peoria, we went after some CBDG money to create a loan, which Mr. Perez, a Hispanic gentleman, sharp businessman, got a $2 million loan to open up the Gateway grocery store. After we got the grocery store back open back up, we went after some more CBDG money to build the Shops on Peoria, which is a little small commercial shopping center. In building that shopping center, we had to do something a little different. It just couldn't be, if you don't have low, if you have a bunch of low to moderate income people living around, you've got to do something different. We want people to become franchisees. So we created the Integrity Forward program in collaboration with TEDC, the Tulsa Economic Development Corporation, which is the entity that you might want to go seek a small business loan from. And so we put these people through a coaching clinic school. If they finish this course, then it became a grant and you didn't have to pay it back, in hopes of getting people to open up franchise facilities where it would look like things that you see at 71st and Memorial and not just the ma-and-pa shops.
So one of the things that we do, and this kind of goes with the K-12 question too, is we look at career pathways. So maybe something that you would consider a low-wage job is a step to a more self-sufficient wage job. And so I think we have to be careful not to be really black and white about thinking about jobs as good or bad. I know that was a question, but I'm copping out, basically. So for example, maybe the pharmacy tech position or for example, one of the demand occupations for the Tulsa area is basically just a laborer in a manufacturing facility, like unloading freight. Okay, that sounds like not such a great job, but if you can get your foot in the door with a job unloading freight in a manufacturing company who's hiring a lot, then that company gets to know that you have a good work ethic, that you show up on time, that you have an interest in learning more, and maybe you get to do some on-the-job training to become a, you know, whatever, an assistant to whomever, or a machinist, or whatever that might be, and work yourself up that ladder. So I would say, especially in this environment, if you demonstrate that you have the potential to do more, in most companies, you're going to be given a chance to do more.
Maybe one other
thing. Did that answer your question? Yeah. Sort of. Okay.
I ran a lot of companies. I can tell you for many, the competition for labor, once you're there, boy, you can rise to the top very quickly. Many of them is Mondays and Fridays. If you show perfect attendance, you're way ahead. If you do a little bit extra and you're not looking at the clock to punch out, you're way ahead. It doesn't, your competition, many of the competition that ended up labor were in those labor jobs were high school dropouts, other have other problems. If a good labor job can rise very quickly, become a supervisor. Not long, because your competition's not that big because against the regular common labor. So the extra push, a entry-level job like that can quickly, if you continue to apply yourself, don't think, this is just a stepping stone, I'm going to look for something else, but really try to make something out of that job, you can rise to the top very, very quickly. And I've had some people that many people that worked for me that were in that track, and because they rose because the competition was nothing. The competition looked at it as, this is a bad job. I want to find another job. All I'm going to do is get out of here and punch the clock out. If you have a little different attitude, companies will respect that.
So I'm the crew leader of the government relations crew for Tulsa's Young Professionals. And so we feel like our job is to advocate and educate people about government issues and how they affect daily lives. But I will tell you, when we talk about incentives earlier, we have something called the Aerospace Engineer Tax Credit, and it's basically a tax credit for anyone that goes into aerospace engineering if they're from an Oklahoma university or Oklahoma installation and they stay in Oklahoma to work. In the past, we've had incentives, and they've listed, or we've had suggestions for legislation that includes nursing, teaching, welding, all of those things that are seen as, you know, great jobs here, and really try to incentivize those jobs as well. And we've just never been able to get that legislation passed. And so we really feel like, and we've talked to Senator Jabbar Shumate about this. I mean, we've talked to a lot of legislators about how can we get teachers to feel incentivized to stay here, because quite frankly, they can go anywhere else and make better pay than they can Oklahoma. And so how do we incentivize those types of jobs? And, you know, there are a lot of programs that do, but how do we as a state really support that? And so I think we have a long way to go. But if we could get all of you in here to join us, to go talk to your legislators about how important it is to incentivize those kinds of jobs and how important those are to our not only current workforce but future workforce, that would be great.
Okay, I'm going to answer this as a lifelong Oklahoman, okay? We have a real pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of mentality in Oklahoma.
No.
For generation, I mean, my family goes back to the land run. So I think ultimately we have to begin to see the value in those kinds of jobs. Ultimately, we have to see that you made your bed, now lie in it, is not an appropriate economic development strategy. So as young people, that's one of the ways that you can work to improve things, is to gently and appropriately and strategically help others to understand that those jobs have value and there is a return on investment for social workers, for drug and alcohol counselors. If you look at the statistics in Oklahoma, we look horrible on paper, and we have to change those things. And the way that you change those things is through the careers that you just discussed. Full disclosure, my husband is a professor at OU Tulsa in the community health department. So in fact, some of you might have him as a professor. But I think that you have to change the way people think about nonprofit and about how we help those populations who are on the lower rungs of our society, how we help them move up and how that benefits everyone.
Does anyone remember A. Philip Randolph in your history lessons? A. Philip Randolph? They used to call him Aza. Aza. A. Philip Randolph was the guy who started the Pullman Porters, the little black men that used to get on the train. He turned them into a union. A. Philip Randolph was the guy that invited Martin Luther King to give the I Have a Dream speech. Everybody remembers the speech and the March on Washington. It was A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin. By A. Philip Randolph starting that first union, his legacy is carried on. There's about 250 A. Philip Randolph Institutes. And I used to be the president for 7 years here in Tulsa. All of your executive board members have to belong to a different labor union. So I represented the firefighters. And the organization itself, it stood for voter registration, voter education, and get out the vote. And it's nonpartisan. So I loved it. The Republicans were after me, the Democrats were chasing me, and the independents wanted to invite me to dinner, but it was nonpartisan. So all I did was educate. And by having this ability to be nonpartisan and stay in alliance with the bylaws, I loved it. But I wrote a grant once. Everybody said, they're not going to give you any money for getting people registered to vote. They gave me $16,000 to create a program to incentivize folks to get up and go get folks to go vote. And one of the first things mentioned is we're talking to Jabbar Shumate, our legislator. If people are sitting on their duffs and not going to vote, you can talk all day to a legislator. He's smiling and grinning. He knows your precinct don't go vote. So anyway, that's what I would say. We got to get rid of some of this apathy. And I know sometimes you got to pick the best of both worlds, but please, let's do what we can to create that power at the ballot box. And I heard a Hispanic guy give a little speech here not long ago, and at the end he said, power to the people. You were there.
Yes, I was.
Power to the people. That's the way it used to be. Mm-hmm. Any more now, it's I got mine. You can get yours if you want to. If not, you dug your bed and, what'd you say, lay in it?
Lay in it, yep.
So we got to change that attitude.
All right, I am going to wrap it up. Thank you very much. I have one final question for the panel. I'm going to ask you to answer very quickly, and we'll start with Mr. Aragon down here on the left. If you could, in just a few words, name the factors that contribute the most to developing Oklahoma's economy and the factors that are holding us back the most. So what do we really have going for us in terms of economic development, and what do we really need to work on the most?
The factor that drives all businesses is human capital development. We have to have the best workforces. There's lots of ways to develop them later. If we can start early, as I've said, it works much better. You get much higher return. But just because you don't start early doesn't mean you stop there. We have to have a higher rate of graduation from college. Everybody's got to recognize that. And we have to do any kind of measure that helps achieve the higher education goal, and then later on the workforce development. But it really, from a policy aspect, the earlier you start, just like the earlier you catch breast cancer, the better you are. The earlier you start, and we start at 9 months, the earlier you start, the highest rate of return. And it declines from there, but still a more positive return than the cost of capital. The other programs are very important, but the key thing is for developing Oklahoma's human capital development. The negatives that we have here, I wish we wouldn't throw back a whole bunch of federal money that they're going to give us free. Covering programs that you're going to have, like public health. We're not going to take Medicaid dollars because somebody doesn't like President Obama. So for the next 3 years, it'd be 90% paid. We're going to turn all that back. The state's going to have to pick it up someplace. It'll show up in your tax bill instead of what we don't accept, New York will get, Massachusetts will get. There's a whole bunch of federal dollars that could come here. And for many of these programs, you know, I'd hope we could look at the best net economic effect for Oklahoma rather than let politics take the impact on that.
All right. Thank you. Terry?
It took a long time for others to convince me that it all starts with education. You know, you can start looking at your education level at an early age and already kind of look at these indicators. It'll tell you where you're going to be 10 or 15 years from now. And so these social scientists, you know, in my opinion, I take the attitude you got to work on all of it. You can't pick any just one, but if you got to pick one, it all starts with education. I think the perception and probably some of the reality of the racism that exists in Oklahoma. You know, we did a study at Community Service Council that said that a person of color is 8 times more likely to be stopped by the police. Where if a person of color is 8 times more likely to get stopped, you're more likely going to end up in jail. And therefore, I think we're like number one or number two with African-American males incarcerated. Depending on whose statistics you're looking at, I guess we're number one or two with women incarcerated.
Number one.
Number one with women incarcerated.
In the world.
You know, and they've got this saying, we're in the basement on a whole lot of issues, from health care to incarceration. So anyway, I think those are the two issues that I would see to address.
Thank you. Let's try and keep it to just a few factors if you can. Good.
And I'm so embarrassed, but could you repeat the question?
What do we have going for us in terms of economic development, and what's holding us back? Most important to you?
Oklahoma's a great state. We have a tremendous workforce. We have a tremendously productive workforce, and I kind of see us as a state full of wildcatters. I mean, we have this incredibly entrepreneurial way about us. So that our quality of life, our cost of living, our history, I think that's all rich, and that those are all good things. I would say the things that hold us back are, you know, Justin already mentioned a lot of people don't have an image of Oklahoma at all. And, you know, I worked at the Department of Commerce 20 years ago, and it was the same way. So I don't know that a giant marketing campaign would really do anything about that. I would really like to change the image of Oklahoma internally, and that's kind of something I referenced earlier. So I think that's the best way, and I think I've seen that in the last 25 years, that especially as the younger generations kind of become part of the workforce in Oklahoma, helping Oklahomans themselves to see how good we have it, and helping the state to help itself. And I know that's very generic, but that's
great.
It.
Thank you, Shelley.
So I think the biggest things that are holding us back, we talked about incentives, and I said, you know, that where there's a lot of other states that have incentives and communities, and so like that or not, that's something that holds us back. I think our image, as Shelley talked about, it's not always that our image is negative, it's just a lot of times we have no image and people don't know what to think of us. And then I'll talk about, you know, workforce in certain areas I think holds us back. So then if we talk about the things that actually are positive attributes here, I think workforce in a lot of areas is very positive, and so it's a negative and a positive for us in different sectors. Cost of living, I think, here is something, and cost of doing business is something that's very positive in Oklahoma. And then quality of life. I think overall we've got a good quality of life with commute times. It's a very livable place, and that's something that I think is a big attribute.
Thank you. Finally.
Last speaker, last panel. Low cost of doing business is definitely something that Oklahoma can tout, and I agree that workforce is both a positive and a negative, but one of the things that I see is that we do a pretty good job of identifying our opportunities and actually tackling them. So you have people on this stage right now that are doers. We recognize that there's a problem, we do something to fix it, and we pull as many people along with us as possible. So whether they want to or not, we talk until they go, okay, I got it. Okay, shut up. What are we going to do about it? So I think, you know, we're doers, and we identify issues, and we jump on those issues, and we try our damnedest to fix them if we can. I would say one of our negatives goes back to the legislature. There's too much. I'm going to get on my soapbox for just 3 seconds so you guys can wrap up. But
I'm intrigued.
There's way too much ideology out there. We spent the entire last session talking about whether or not we should fix the Capitol. Hello, it's ours. We need to fix it if it's broken. If the front of your house was falling off, you would fix it. You wouldn't spend 4 months talking about how we're going to fix it or where we're going to get the money. You'd go get a loan, and you fix the darn thing. So why are we talking about this stuff that doesn't matter when we should be talking about how are we going to make our healthcare system work and how are we not going to let 300,000 people fall off the healthcare rolls in December?
Thank you. All right, I'm going to have to end it there.
Okay.
I think that you got an amen. Let's have a round of applause for everybody on the panel. Thank you very much.